right, welcome back everybody to the Five Hole Taxi Squad, a Five Hole Fantasy Hockey presentation. We are here on tonight's episode, October 17th, for the Week 2 weekend preview. So, Jay, start up the fares and let's get into it. Alan and Jay, the taxi squad from the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey team. How are we doing tonight, boys? Welcome back to the pod.
Better than my fantasy team tonight.
Yeah, let's talk some hockey.
Damn you, Buffalo. Damn you. All right, like we said in the slow intro there, we are here to talk the Week 2 weekend preview. But before we dive in there, you know, follow all three of us on Twitter. You'll find our Twitter handles in the show notes. If you're not in the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Discord community, get in there. That's a huge group now of like-minded fantasy hockey individuals talking all things hockey, and it is revving up like you would not believe with all different kinds of questions, whether that's trades, ads, drops, schedule maximization, and then there's even some channels in there where we're talking real life and what you're doing for fun when you're not being obsessive over this fantasy hockey ecosystem that is all around us and very much alive. And please, as always, we thank you for all listening and taking the time out of your days to get this sweet taxi fan cab goodness into your ears. But subscribe, like, give us 5 stars in wherever you get your fine podcasts from. Let's start it off with a little bit of what's going on around the league. First of all, we'll kick off with the injury report. Yes, the Renaissance man, Taylor Hall, he is cured. He is back. He is back last night. Pretty sure he did nothing, if I'm not mistaken. I even watched part of that game as a Leafs fan. He missed 3 prime opportunities to set Bedard up in a high danger scoring chance opportunity. And it just looked like he was asleep at the wheel. So I go back to our take on Taylor Hall for the listeners during our preseason content in the division previews. He's been asleep for a while. If you want to ride him to see if he can get going now that he's healthy again, because he's still riding shotgun to Bedard, by all means. I picked him up for last night's game just to see if he was not asleep, and he still is. So I kicked him into the sun this morning for an ad in one of my leagues. Moving on to some actual injury news. Steven Stamkos is day-to-day with lower body injury. Today in practice, they were practicing without him on the PP, and that is a cha-ching for Sergachev, as much as I don't want Stamkos to be hurt because it's a contract year and we want to see him do well, and he's an amazing player when he's healthy. Tampa was practicing today on their PP1 with Hedman and Sergachev on the point. I would imagine that will just be in the interim until Stamkos comes back.
It was Serge in Stamkos's spot on the in the OV circle. So curse your monkey paw wish that Serge
actually
wins.
I think
out.
I saw a quote from Serge on that after practice with one of the beat reporters, and he's like, I know I'm not Stamkos, but I've been on the power play before, and I'm pretty sure I can figure out playing lower. And I think I can handle playing a bit lower than the blue line this time around. So Serge is feeling it too. He feels it in his bones that he wants to be the power play one guy. He does. He feels it. Okay. I'm not taking anything away from Hedman, but I'm just putting out those vibes into the world that Serge wants some PP1 deployment. He does not want 18% of the power play share. Okay. That's not him.
Oh man. If Serge is taking anything away, he's taken away PP1 from Edmund.
Kirby Doc, unfortunately, another unlucky individual that seems to skate ass backwards into injuries. And he did look really strong out of the gate for Montreal and looked like he was going to get prime deployment for them. I see Alan has a question mark by MCL, but I did see a report.
Yeah, so I just came in as we started recording. He is done for the season.
with an ACL and MCL tear. So bye-bye Kirby Doc. Unfortunately for the young man, he is going to miss the rest of the season. And personally, I think that hurts the Habs' overall offensive production. As we all know, Kirby Doc comes with high draft pedigree in real life from the Blackhawks system. Never was able to really take off there. But like I said, in the small sample size in week one, it did look like he was going to get an opportunity to be, you know, in their top four. So pretty unfortunate there. Don't bother putting him on RI Plus or IR because he's gone till next year. I know Newhook moved into his 2C position and he did score tonight. Again, another high draft capital acquired by the Habs from Colorado. We'll see. Maybe he can take off from that position like Doc was showing. But again, they gave Doc 20 minutes of ice time when he was healthy last week. They only gave Newhook tonight at the 2C 16 and a half minutes. So perhaps that grows over time. But again, he did score tonight. So somebody to maybe either put on your watch list or stream when the Habs have a good schedule is Alex Newhook.
Craig.
Yes.
Are we not forgetting?
Oh, no.
A clear, clear winner in this unfortunate circumstance.
I'll let you hit on the clear winner of who's going to get all the forward ice time now and all even more opportunity to score goals.
Sean Monahanessons. Book it.
Well, and I want to give a shout out to our other taxi squad driver as well. Goal call Caulfield is probably going to get all the forward minutes with Nick Suzuki and Sean Monahan on that top line now, especially losing Doc for the remainder of the season. But let's not dive too deep into the Habs conversation because, as we were talking offline, apparently I'm losing the my dudes, my guys that I have labeled for the 2023-2024 season just at a rapid pace. Matt Boldy is week to week. There is real no update. I believe it's an upper body injury, so I'm not entirely sure when he will be back. I did see for those looking for who's going to replace him, if they do have him on their roster, I saw that Marcus Johansson moved into his PP1 spot in practice today. Man, you might as well just start highlighting these as my guys. Tonight, another guy that is one of my guys who I was really high on, he's prime deployment in Winnipeg. Gabe Vilardi also got hurt today. No update on him, but just watch if you have him in any spots. He is out. He left the game tonight and he has not returned. And Sebastian Aho has been ruled out for tonight's game with an upper body injury that probably moves Jesper Kapkaniemi up to 1C, and probably he will take the power play 1 spot for tonight. Probably not a pivot you want to make unless you can quickly drop Aho into your IR plus or IR spot. Nobody's going to listen to this tonight, so I digress. But maybe monitor that if you are an Aho owner out there. We'll see if there's a status if he is out week to week. Kapkaniemi could be a pickup for you as a spot fill-in if he gets Aho's deployment and minutes. Other news and notes from around the league. Just a couple of observations from the squad here for some of those guys with question marks beside them to start the season. There has been notes from the beat writers in Philly that Owen Tippett's been practicing on line one with Couturier and Atkinson. Obviously off to an extremely slow start. Time on ice really down, wasn't getting PP1. I don't think that any of the three of us have the answer on Tippett, but there are viable value above replacements around there. But if you are holding him, maybe continue to do so and see if the line one deployment holds and if it means anything for his overall time on ice. This would be a similar story for Jake DeBrusque. He was also practicing on Boston's top line with Pasta and Zaka. We also saw a report that Josh Norris is skating and was practicing with Power Play 2 yesterday, I believe, or this morning. Hopefully, he is on his way back and will be slotted, I would hope, right back into the top six in Ottawa. And I think that is it, boys. Unless any of you had something that you had seen or wanted to talk on in news and notes and storylines. Oh, yes, the Devon Taves signing. Colorado did extend Devon Taves 7 years at 7.25. Great signing. I think Devon Taves is a fantastic real life defenseman, but the only time his ceiling really gets pushed, maybe even his floor really gets pushed, is if there's a Makar injury. And for hockey, nobody wants that because Makar is amazing. Again, another smart move by a smart organization, locking up one of their key pieces on the back end. And that takes us right into the weekend preview for week two. So, Alan, why don't you hit the people with the prime schedules that they want to target going into Thursday and Friday ads, and hit them with some streamers that we have identified for them as well.
Yeah. So Calgary, the only team that has that Friday and Sunday schedule to avoid the busy Saturday. But if you want to get either side of Saturday, Friday, Columbus, Jersey, and the New York Islanders play on Friday. Small tip, if you want to grab someone and hold them, or if you're punting the week or something, Jersey has four games next week with three off nights. And then Sunday, Anaheim, Boston, and Detroit play. But streamers, Matt Coronato, still single-digit ownership. Right wing, his last game, he had 2017 time on ice and 501 power play time on ice. Yeah, any guy who gets that kind of deployment, probably worth holding.
I tried to make my own sound drop there with a rocket ship.
I'll add it magically later. And then on Detroit, Lucas Raymond. It looks like he's back on that top line with DeBrincat and Larkin, who are kind of a little bit on fire right now, much to my dismay. 43%, so he's approaching that just-go-check territory. Pavel Zacha on Boston. So I'm surprised he's under 50% owned. He's line one, power play one with Pasta, one of the best wingers in the game. Columbus, Kirill Marchenko, 10% owned, right wing. So far, he has three assists in two games. He had four all of last season. He's on the Boone Jenner line, whether you believe that's line one, line two. He's with probably one of their best players, but only power play two. And then on Anaheim, I think it was a hat trick the other night when those eggplant uniforms, center left wing, 23%. Frank Vetrano, he had 20 minutes and 50 seconds time on ice last game. Whether or not that holds, I think they may be easing Zegras back into the game as he missed camp, which would explain why he got more time than Zegras.
He did have 20 minutes in the game one, and he has eight shots on goal in the first two games. This is a guy who scored 22 last year on 231 shots. The biggest downfall for him is he gets no power play time. None. Like, almost diddly. I think he gets like 12% share in Anaheim. Or he would be probably more rosterable, in my opinion. But a great point out. I like this kid for this week for sure.
Some 0G candidates. Lucas Dostal, who... No, he didn't shut out Carolina, but he held them to one goal. They have a back-to-back this weekend, so we'll see him. James Reimer on Detroit, first game of the season, gets a shutout. He'll either see Ottawa or Calgary. And then Laurent Brossoit, I saw on Twitter that it looks like they want to get him in sooner rather than later. I don't like their matchups the rest of the week, though. It's Vegas and Edmonton. But yeah, I know. Maybe next week, because they have a slightly easier schedule. But keep an eye on him for starts coming up here. Some big boy banger streams. Jonas Siegenthaler on Jersey covers all categories with some point upsides. I think he's already had two or three assists so far. Big boy banger captain or assistant captain Radko Gudas, somehow still under 50% owned if you need someone to get your hits every week. And then Ivan Provorov on Columbus. He'll cover all the categories, and it's kind of hard to tell. It looks like the most recent game was kind of a mix between him, Boquist, and Severson for power play time. But I know that Severson rode the bench for that third period. So I watched the practice lines on him. That's all I got to you, Jay, for kind of the streaming strategy segment.
Oh, yeah. I liked so many of your streaming options, Alan. Like, they hit basically every one of those teams. But yeah, like, Big setup essentially is that there's no good team once again, with one bold exception. 30 teams are playing on Saturday. You're going to have a full bench, just like you're going to have a full lineup anyway. It's target the Friday and target the Sunday to obviously get some teams around that would add some additional points instead of just a completely bottlenecked Saturday. The one team that has the Friday-Sunday turn for this coming week is Calgary. And in Calgary, we covered it already. There's what, Coronado, when he's rising up the ranks, that player, that kind of deployment is exactly what you're looking for. Dylan Dubé, he's getting power play 2-time. Single-digit ownership as well, like definitely worth a sharing. Govich, right, was previously playing on the top line as well. So just a couple names. These guys are all low percentage owned, single-digit, right, on some of these guys. And they play both on, again, Friday and Sunday. So they definitely will be rosterable. They'll be playing alone on your team. It's also worthwhile to consider earlier streaming options such as that same Friday and Sunday, and there are 2 games each of those days. The Sunday stream, I would say, if you can, hold off to see how the Saturday plays out, and maybe you could hold that additional ad for an early next week stream. The 4 teams that are playing on Sundays that are your literal last-minute dies are the Detroit Red Wings, the Calgary Flames, the Boston Bruins, and the Anaheim Ducks. We covered Calgary already. Some of those other players that are worthwhile would be, there's Lucas Raymond on Detroit, JT Compher, Jeff Petrie, Daniel Sprong, as we mentioned. All these guys are either getting power play 1, power play 2, and are lower ownership than 50. Boston Allen already covered with Pavel Zacha. I don't know how that guy in line 1 PP1 is not getting taken. He should definitely be owned up. James Van Riemsdyk, I know he's getting, I think Craig mentioned 12 minutes, but I mean, hey, 2 goals, 2 games, point per game. Hey, you know,
he's turning into like a defenseman that's a power play specialist, but he's a forward. Like he's literally going to get deployed just to play on the power play because he's good at picking up the scraps, which is what he did when he was in Toronto, but we didn't have anybody else. So they gave him like 17 minutes of ice time.
I mean, you could argue, Americans aside, like, who do we got? We got probably what? Austin Matthews, Patrick Kane, Joe Pavelski. And I'm going to say it for a while. James Van Riemsdyk, probably softest hands of an American in the league for 2-3 years. But, you know, obviously, like, you know, the American game has been improving and growing at such a drastic pace. Obviously now there's so many good American players across the league, but hey, JVR, you know, give 10 or 10, 12 years ago, you know, I was a pretty good team. You know, he's those silky smooth mitts, probably still worth it on the power play, especially if it's just, again, like one night stand territory on the Sunday. There are worse power plays to be on than the Boston Bruins power play. Anaheim is a gold mine in terms of value. Rodko Gudas is still 45% owned. It's like they don't even listen to this podcast. Like big daddy bangers, that guy, get him. Worth considering for a hold if he's somehow still on your wire. Mason McTavish, Frank Vetrano, we covered already. Jamie Drysdale is injured, but still has the potential possibility of snagging that PP1. Ryan Strome, Adam Henrique, first line power play 1. I think he's 4% owned. Anaheim. Sunday. Actually, a slightly scary statement to put together if that's what you need to save your week, but worth, definitely worth adding just to see. They also play a Saturday, Sunday back-to-back, which shouldn't be a factor, but if you somehow have a spot and you're looking for that, also worth considering. Just to roll on into the next week, previews onto some guys on the turn that you might want to hold if you are throwing in the towel early on week 2 and just to nab early for week 3. Buffalo, Minnesota, Montreal, New Jersey, and Washington all play 4 games next week. I'm not going to jump into some teams such as Buffalo, where a lot of Buffalo is fantasy owned up anyway. Same thing with Minnesota. A lot of the value is pretty much snapped up. But Montreal? Oh my goodness. Matheson is 35% owned. Somebody has got to assist Cole Caulfield. Pick him up. I feel like I'm saying it over and over again. Sean Monahan. We joked about the Monahanissance, but he's actually 1% owned. He's going to be bumped from line 3 to line 2 center. He's getting PP one time. He actually got the most power play time tonight in a 5-2 loss, obviously. I might have oversold it slightly. He got beaten out by Matheson, and he got beaten out by Caulfield. But would you honestly have believed that Monahan would be number 3 after power play in power play time?
Yes, they know it's coming.
Well, we trust the team then. Just like Alan said, they know the Monahanissance is on its way.
I'm just letting Jay go here because this is some beautiful strategy stuff. But just a note, we don't in fact know that Jamie Drysdale is injured. He just was not on the ice today at practice. There is no update on why he wasn't on the ice. So just something to monitor if he's a depth defenseman for you on your watch list.
Just to round off at the end with Washington, New Jersey is also in the Buffalo situation. Most guys worth rostering are already owned up. We could mention Siegenthaler. That's a really depth piece play. Let's move on to Washington. Washington's another gold mine. They're viewed to be crappy, maybe rightfully so in terms of a hockey competitive standpoint, but oh my goodness, fantasy gold mine. Tom Wilson is 45% owned. Tom Wilson. You forgot about the right wing position. You pick up Tom Wilson. That is a, you know, that's a definite steal and potential long-term hold. Rasmus Sandin, obviously you're playing him with the schedule. But yeah, like hold on to him and see where he comes. This is, again, just as Alan mentioned in our previews, during the division previews. Rasmus Sandin was scoring at a pace that outperformed Carlson at points last season. The talent's obviously there. Pick him up, hold him on too. Kuznetsov, Strome, Oshie, all of these guys are under 30% owned. And they're either getting line 1, line 2, PP1, PP2 time.
Definitely worth noting, Strome practiced today on the top line with Ovi.
Ooh, spicy.
Definitely. Cue that rocket noise again.
And I mean, if we're talking about Ovi, we have to mention Nicholas Backstrom, line 1, PP1, 7% owned.
Well, Strom's up there now. I think Backstrom has dropped.
Yeah, Strom, baby.
I saw that report too. Strom is, on the top line, and my hot take on Backstrom looks like it's sinking into the sea. Because he's now 3C, but he's still on the top power play. So
yeah, okay, maybe a half cocked rocket to the moon for Backstrom, but 7% owned. Like, we'll see. Someone's got to assist Ovi's clapper from the circle. But yeah, aside from these teams that are on the turn, like week three definitely shapes up to be a much more streaming, diverse, and varied opportunity. But week two, at the weekend turn, the real secret is, yeah, set that 2:57 alarm clock. And I hope you get those Calgary
Who
Flames.
Does that? No one does that on this pod more than once.
Yeah, I'm never doing that.
Yeah. We all deny that we've ever set a 2:57 alarm. 2:57 a.m.
2:55.
We can't give away all of our strategies. Come on now.
To you, Greg.
All right, so that takes us into our watch list dudes heading into the weekend and heading into next week. But before we hit on that, just a couple of juicy tidbits because they're related to what we've been talking about. You do see a switch. As we said, Sebastian Aho is out tonight. It is, in fact, Turbo Teravainen, N1C, not Kotkaniemi. So that is an interesting development. Turbo has scored 3 goals through 3 games. I didn't even know he played center. So that's an interesting deployment, something to watch heading out of tonight's games. And shocker, Jonathan Drouhin is off the top line in Colorado. And Valerie Nichushkin is back up there with McKinnon and Rantanen. So I see Allen going to his waiver wire immediately to add him. He is dual eligible, right wing and left wing. And just to help Allen, I'm going to just tell the listeners how much he's owned, because I've seen him on several waivers. Yeah, you know, he's just go check status. He's 63% owned. So I would just go check on him, especially with his moves, you know, and to the smart people that I play against in fantasy hockey, he is not available anywhere in any of my leagues, but he's in just go check status, especially moving up to that top line deployment. We all agreed that that was probably inevitable, whether it was going to be Nichushkin or Lekkonen was probably going to take that spot from Drouin at some point. If it looks like it is happening. So let us dive into our watch list dudes for the weekend and heading into next week. I'll build off of Ivan Provorov's drop from Allen in the big boy bangers. He is getting the power play one deployment primarily with the Rowinski injury. However, Boqvist and Jarek, is that how we say his last name? The young kid, David Jarek. Boqvist has already been mixed in. Jarek could get time there. He is a high capital draft pick, was called up after the Rowinski injury. So was one of those shocking last-minute cuts from the Blue Jackets. Very good young defenseman. Looked pretty good in his debut as well. And I would imagine the three of them will get mixed through the power play there until Rowinski's back. But just a point to note, I think Jarek and Provorov are more viable holds in categories leagues. Rowinski is supposed to be back sometime late next week. So I would imagine he goes right back into QB1 status. I'm not a huge fan of Adam Boqvist. He doesn't do a whole lot unless he's on a power play. But if he's going to get some of that run until Rowinski's back, it's something to watch and keep an eye on who gets the majority share there in Columbus. I don't even know where to start because I'm excited about both of these points. Because it's happening. Leo Carlson is back in Anaheim, and he's practicing with Zegras and Terry on the top line, and he's on the top power play. It's exciting. Maybe they can score goals finally. This kid also looks like he was NHL ready before the unfortunate ankle injury in practice. He said, I saw an interview he did with the beat reporter after practice today. He did say he's like 80% for Sunday's game. He wants to be 100% before he makes his season debut because he wants to make an impact. There's going to be rocket ships blasting off all over this episode. Love it. And then a complimentary piece who also looks like he might get some run after a great game on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. Their other young high capital draft pick in Pavel Michikov is also practicing on power play one with Drysdale not being at practice today. He had a very strong last game. He looked like he has some good offensive pedigree. And I think this also raises the potential for a higher ceiling from the likes of Zegras and Terry and even Ryan Strome, who's also on that top power play unit, who's also had a pretty decent start for an Anaheim player. And that would be my just go check kind of hold guy that Jay mentioned would be Ryan Strome. I think he's only like 8 or 9% owned. He's dual eligible. He does a little bit of everything. And then my final guy is, what are we doing, people? I don't even think he's a watch list guy. He is a go and get him if he is available. He's still only 34% owned. Please, please, please. This is not just go check. Go get Evan Rodriguez. He has 3 points in 2 games. He is averaging over 18 minutes time on ice with Barkov on the top line. He is on power play one. He is dual eligible, center, left wing. He could be tri-eligible. If he holds this deployment, this is another guy who looks like he's found a fit and an opportunity to play with two of Florida's best players. And even more value, Sam Reinhart today practicing on that line with them. He's moved up from line 3 to top line. What does the man have to do to get some love of people? One of the hottest players in fantasy through a week and a half. He is 15th overall in fantasy scoring right now. 15th. He should not be on waivers until he jumps into an ice bath. Evan Rodriguez is not a watchlist dude. He's a go-get. All right, while I take a deep breath, we're going to dive into the mailbag here because we did send that beacon out to the world last week.
You've got mail.
So we'll dive into that, and I'm going to give the first one to Alan because I'm way too excited. The first one is from @fantasy_pucks on Twitter/X. He asked us, do we see a big bump in scoring from the Ducks this season, specifically Zegras and Terry?
And of course, I'm high on Troy Terry, even though I don't own him in the leagues that matter to me. Do we see a bump? Yes. Big bump? I guess it depends on if you consider 72 point per game big, especially with the now additions of Carlson and Minchkov. More elite talent, as we've said with both Anaheim and Montreal, like the rising tide floats all boats. So yeah, I do see if they all click a bump, but not like 70 to 100 points bump, if that was what you meant by big.
Yeah, look, I think I agree with you. Like, they're leading the team in power play time share on ice, both of them at about 64%. I'd like to actually see that go up. I would hope it is, especially if you're going to run two of your young studs with them, with Carlson and Michikov on that top power play unit. I'd like to see that go up slightly to like that 70%+. I think that will help them. Like you said, I think they're softly working Zegras in because he missed camp. I think once they ramp him up back to that, you know, 18, 19, 20 minutes time on ice, I think you're going to see that. But I would agree with you. I would say ceiling for both of them is 75 points. If we are being honest, I would think that would make probably mean Carlson's going to get to like 50, 55 points. And that's pretty big output for a rookie on Anaheim. But I think he would have to also elevate his own game as well as their games and stick on that line one with them for them to really push that 75 point pace. I think both of them can push being a top 70 player, with Zegras just because he does a little bit more in terms of penalty minutes and the peripheral stuff. If Zegras can push the 40 goals mark, he'll 100% be a top 50 player. But I think a lot of things need to happen right for Anaheim, and that is a big uptick in scoring for that to occur. Carlson and Michikov are great additions, like you said, Alan. Adding more elite talent around elite talent generally equals more output, but the team's coming off like one of the poorest scoring seasons of all time. I don't know if it's like through the roof for the both of them.
I think at the end of the day, we need to remember that we are focused in fantasy necessarily not on, what do you call it, like hand holding these players and like seeing them fully grow and mature. Like, it depends on what league you're in, right? If you're in a dynasty league, of course, like these guys are so young, they should go the route of Clayton Keller, right? They should grow and become and mature. And as the draft picks roll through for Anaheim, that this team, you know, is led into glory with Zegras and Terry. But we're in 2023, 2024, right? Like, if you're in a redraft league, you're seeing this team and their players as they are. And what do we see their ceiling, right? Like, Zegras and Terry, that's what, like a 65-point
player? Yeah, I think realistically it's 65 to 70 points, and Terry has 30-goal upside. But I think everybody would agree with me. The hope would be now, if you're putting Carlson at line one and you're putting Michikov at PP1, ride that and just see what happens. Give, like, do exactly what the Coyotes are doing with Jersey and Hayton. Ride them 20 minutes a game and see what happens. I think that's what pushes the ceiling for all of those players. But if they're gonna fall in the 16 to 17 minutes time on ice, and Vetrano's still getting run and Henrique's still getting run, like, that's when you're gonna limit the ceiling for Zegras and Terry.
Like, at the end, this team needs to be good in order for them to score a ton more goals than 65 to 70 points. And if Cam Fowler, no offense to Cam Fowler, but if that man is tasked with running and I guess like orchestrating at the top of the umbrella of the power play, no, that team is not going to be good enough to score that many points. And then Zegras and Terry's point totals are heavily affected from there.
Just an interesting note for the listeners and for the squad. Michikov through week one, he had 40% of the power play share from PP2, which was only 8% behind Cam Fowler from the same power play unit. And Drysdale had 52% of the power play share in week one. So I think they might be feeling it out in terms of who their QB1 power play quarterback is, and the numbers are kind of showing that. It'd be interesting to see what the breakout is if Carlson comes back and plays the three games this week, what his power play deployment is. But let's not get lost in Anaheim again. Before I dive into the second question, and then I'll throw this one to Jay, just going back to my Evan Rodriguez excitement, he is, in fact, from week one, second on the team on power play share at 75%, tied for first with Ekman Larson. Jay, second question, and we kind of started to answer it in terms of what's going on around the league. This one comes from another Twitter listener. It's Amar 626-58560. He asked, what do we do with Tippett after a down week one and poor deployment?
Yeah, and the first one is, look at your own league and look at their specific scoring settings, because one, if your league is super duper dynasty or keeper and it's really tough, like this is a young guy, he's coming up, you're not going to drop him after week one. Come on. You're not going to drop him after week one and a half. From what we saw, he's, you know, a second year player. He's going to have growing pains and he's going to improve drastically. Now, I'm also going to say this at the same time. The Flyers were pretty bad last season, and this season has... it's early days, right? But it seems like when they win big, and they lose big. And so if you're not willing to stomach those swings as well, look at your waiver wire and see what's in comparison, right? Like, so right now, if we were to look on waiver wires, we're talking about schedules, right? Like, we're looking at guys that are like Eric Howla, because his schedule looks pretty nice. But, I mean, we're looking at Sharon Govich, right? Because, ooh, it seems like, oh, he's got some pretty good preseason setups. I'm not going to lie to you, listener, but if that's the quality of your waiver wire, just be patient with Tippett. Like, his upside is, and his deployment is way higher. Now, at the same time, I'm playing in some leagues where you have a chance to get Michael Bunting off the wire. Line one, power play one, pretty much a similar setup to Tippett. If those guys of similar quality, specifically the guys that are getting line one, power play one deployment, are just floating around in your wire, and you're sitting here, the truth is that wire is going to be chocked filled with value, and the schedule needs to be played. If those players are just sitting around, those are points waiting to be picked up, and Tippett is kind of just tipping your hand at that week.
Well, I think you hit, and, you hit the other side of the coin there, Jay, just there briefly. It's value above replacement for me with Tippett. I'll be transparent with the team and with the listeners. I've dropped him in several places, but it was also based on who was available at that time. And we're talking, you know, Alan mentioned this to another listener on Discord just today in a similar conversation about Tippett. If guys like Seth Jarvis, Dawson Mercer, Lucas Raymond, Evan Rodriguez are all available. I know Evan Rodriguez doesn't hit like Tippett, but if they are the guys you're looking at in terms of potential replacements for Tippett, those are all guys that I would 100% say you, as of right now, because Alan said it offline, Torts has all his veterans back. I think it's going to be a mixed bag of deployment for Philly for at least the first half of the season. If you have a viable value above replacements, you take them now and you see how it nets out. He's only right wing eligible. It's not like you can slot him into multiple places. and he's underperforming. And I know it's early, but he's a peripheral guy anyways. You probably took him late in your drafts hoping for a breakout. There should be somebody at least you can ride hot now, potentially as a longer term hold. So let's move into our third question. And I think we do this quick hitter here. And it's just one because it's a replacement for a injured player. And it's Jay's favorite topic. So maybe we'll give Jay one or two, Alan, but you and I can just do a quick hitter. It's from a Discord listener, Dirty Work on the Discord. And he wanted to know, or she, what is a feasible realistic replacement for Rowinski? I already have my answer, but Alan, if you need a mo...
I was about to say, I feel like we both have the same answer.
I'm going to let you go first, and then I will find another one.
Yeah, The Way, the Truth, and Life, Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
See, we're...
Clear cut power play one for connected. Florida right
we're
now.
We're connected. You read my mind. I didn't even have to say it.
For this week anyway, Noah Hanifin is probably a just go check. No power play time, but he's gotten a couple points, and he'll throw up some peripherals for you. Mike Matheson, who we talked about earlier, 35% owned, sneaky good value. Power play one on Montreal with no competition. That's a big one. And he'll cover all the categories.
Yeah. Jay, what do you got, man? Or are you still mining? You need me to hit a couple here.
Alan has absolutely hit the nail on the head. I mean, Matheson, I can't believe after we've said his name like infinitely, I thought he was going to be Jesus Christ. My goodness, saving all fantasy owners who forgot about the defensive PP one quarterback position. But it's insane on Yahoo. You're looking at Durzi, right? Like Durzi 60% owned. Cam Fowler's 51% owned. Owen Power and Cam Fowler are the guys that are kind of sidling past Werenski, right? Like they're just hovering in and around 50%. I tried mining all the way down, and I think, yeah, aside from Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the only other guy that's probably, you know, line one PP1 that would, you know, you might scratch your head a bit and go for it maybe would be Cam York, as we aforementioned, but I don't know if that's necessary long-term either, but yeah, he is getting the deployment. Strangely enough, looking at tonight's game, though, the power play time in Philly is bizarre. Am I seeing Sanheim getting 60% of the power play share?
Hey, Sanheim is a sneaky, decent two-way defenseman, and I'm not surprised if they're giving him some run, because guess what? Veteran versus rookie, Torts is going to trust the veteran before the rookie, guaranteed, regardless of Cam York's pedigree as an offensive defenseman. So I'm not surprised by that.
Maybe.
I'm not surprised.
And maybe that's the problem with going Cam York, and that is that you are not dealing with necessarily the Brind'Amour blender, but you get Torts.
And like... Sanheim's interesting. Sanheim 24-30 tonight. Three shots on goal, one hit, three blocks. So interesting depth piece there, Jay, that you just did live on air with what happened in a game. But I'm going to go back to the watch list, dude. Why not do it? They have three games left this week. Michkov, baby, go get him. If he's going to be on power play one, even if it's for this week. Anaheim, I believe you can at least score on the power play. All right, and our last question from the listeners, we'll do this similar. We'll go around the room, and I have two answers, and one of them is fairly simple because I've said his name like six times already. After week one and seeing night one and two of week two, and this is from Alex MCK4 on the Discord, who are your best long-term adds and holds at this point? Who wants to jump in and grab one?
Well, besides The Way, the Truth, and the Life, Evan Rodriguez, Brian Rust for me. Like, I was able to get him off waivers, and it looks like he might be back. And especially after tonight with Aho going out. And he won't shoot at 80% or whatever he's at right now, but I'd say Turbo might be worth
contract
a look.
Year. I think
he got faded contract hard. Year. Yeah.
Jay, what do you got?
I don't know. I'm so in love with the waiver wire. I don't think I could marry any of these people after one week.
I'll let you mine because I got a couple. Okay. Other than Alan took it out, so I won't say his name again. Evan Rodriguez. The others for me in terms of potential holds, either in the interim, whether that's a couple of weeks or long term, is Lucas Raymond if he can hold the deployment with Larkin and DeBrincat and starts to get some more power play deployment as well. I'm also going to go to the Pittsburgh Penguins because he's looked good, because Geno Malkin's looked good. Is Riley Smith dual eligible, left wing, right wing? I think he has like 14 shots through three games. He has 3 points, one goal, and he's only like 10% rostered at this point. So very readily available, getting top six deployment. The only thing that hurts him is he's not getting any power play time. But Geno looks like Geno, and Crosby and him are on fire to start the season. You want every piece of who is around them. And to Alan's point, Rust and Riley are still, Riley Smith are still readily available. So I would put them up there. And then I'm going back to the well, Logan Cooley, Nick Schmaltz, Barrett Hayton. 20 minutes of ice time for both their two games. All of them getting ample power play time share. All of them are very available, especially Hayton. I think he's still only like 15% owned. But if I had to pick one of them just because of his dual eligibility and his ability to get hot and put up multi-point nights, is Nick Schmaltz is probably the longer term hold out of the three of them, because if he's healthy, he probably sticks with Keller the longest. I would put Logan Cooley ahead of him if you need a center, but he's only center only, so that kind of limits your flexibility in your lineup. Similar with Hayton as well. But for upside, and if Cooley can actually push Hayton out of that 1C spot, which I don't necessarily see right away, but if all five of them are getting similar deployment, they've looked pretty good through three games, but they played the Islanders tonight, and we all know what Sorokin and that team can do to any team that tries to score on them. And they showed that again tonight. They can just make it super boring and shut them down and win 1-0. So those would be our long-term holds. I just go check on Seth Jarvis. I'm still not a huge fan of him. I know he's getting deployment. His time on ice dipped the other night to like 16 minutes. I knew he wasn't going to hold that 20-plus minute deployment. But if the Aho injury is something more significant, maybe that boosts his value moving forward. And honestly, I would just go check on Boone Jenner. I know it's, don't chase points, and he's coming off a hat trick on Saturday, and they just got shut out too on Monday. So that didn't look great, but he has looked very, very good, and he looks like a man on a mission this year, and he does a little bit of everything, and he's getting all the deployment there. I think he's 43% owned, so that's a just go check guy if you want a longer term hold. He's dual eligible at center left wing. And just, I just want to precedent something before we close tonight, and if any of you guys have any closing thoughts, everybody out there, including the three of us, practice patience, okay? I've seen some crazy chatter going on with the Buffalo team and trades being out there and trades being considered, and Alan said Alex Tuch got dropped in one of his leagues, and like the teams that were top five, top eight in scoring last year that are off to slow starts are going to be fine. Don't throw them out to the garbage because somebody's giving you somebody that's riding hot right now. Or even worse, I know Tuck's not a bona fide stud, but he's a 30-goal, 60-point guy riding shotgun to Tage and Skinner. It just be patient with these slow start teams. Like, look at Edmonton. They just exploded tonight. Hyman had 4 points, and it was all before the third period. Like, the teams that were the high-scoring teams last year are probably going to be right there in that conversation this year, okay? Patience, mine where you can in terms of streams, but use the peripheral guys on your roster. Don't use your studs, and don't use the guys that are riding shotgun to those studs and also getting power play one deployment. You don't need to fire them into the sun yet. They will be fine. I don't know if you guys have any closing thoughts for tonight before we sign off, but Jay's chomping, so I'm gonna let him go. You go, Jay, you go.
Again, I would much rather every listener just become a waiver wire addict, just like me, okay? I'm going to caveat that. Check your schedules, check your streams, get 7-10 ads, get your commissioner to just up those ads and, you know, plow your way through. Having said that caveat, if you are looking for a guy who's going to be held all year with a goal that, I guess, you're okay, it's like a week one, he's a long-term ad coming out of week one, this is what I feel. You need a guy who is going to play a lot. And you also need a guy who's playing a lot, but not already owned. You also need a stud not to be sitting in the wings, just waiting to pop back on. I'm a Stamkos owner in the league. He was out tonight. I don't even know which player. I think it was Sergachev that was taking his PP1 spot, keeping it warm for him. But that's the problem. No matter what run Sergachev gets, he's only keeping a spot warm for another bona fide stud to roll in. So if there's anything that's a long-term ad or a long-term hold coming out of week one, you have to look for a team that doesn't have a bona fide superstar waiting in that position. I'm going to say two names. One's going to make you throw up a little bit, and the other one's going to make you puke the rest after you've already thrown up once. But follow that in mind. It depends on how shitty the Chicago Blackhawks are. But honestly, Bedard's been... I've been pleasantly surprised. I thought there'd be some real stinking games. I'm pretty sure he's still pulling point per game all the way through so far. We'll see how he goes, right? Four games in. It's a long season.
He's top five in shots on goal, too, if I'm not mistaken, to start the season. Right.
So the goals will come for Connor Bedard.
I know who you're going to say, and I don't like it. But he is, like, in Bangers Cats Leagues, and with his time on ice, he's, like, top 40 right now. Top 20 in a couple of leagues that I checked. Say it. Just say his fucking name.
I've dropped him too, but Taylor Hall?
No, not him.
Line one?
No, we don't want to talk about him. Corey Perry is the guy I know you want to say. I know you want to say that.
Okay, yeah. Corey Perry was the other guy. But Taylor Hall? You got to go for a first overall pick. And I mean, this is Connor Bedard, whatever. But hey, Taylor Hall, he's sitting pretty, 44% owned, even got hurt over the weekend just to get a couple extra drops for you, listener, to add him back up. He's left wing, you know, score goal-scoring winger. Hopefully, he gets in on some of the action with Bedard. Yes, I also think Corey Perry's power play time definitely warrants. That man's a winner. He's a proven winner. He will possibly win you your league if he ends up continuing ride shotgun.
Alan, we need to stop him. He's saying Corey Perry's a league winner. We need to stop this man.
No, because it's Tyler Johnson. Come on, kids.
Okay, well, Garrett, finish your thought, Jay. Finish your thought.
Chicago is in the situation where we don't know who's going to end up being on that wing, riding on with Bedard into the glorious golden fantasy finals sunset. Now, there's one more guy, and it's going to sound ridiculous, but again, this is a long-term hold for the hope. He hasn't scored any points yet, but he's racked up 11 shots over the last four games, so you figure one of them is going to eventually go in. Lucas Reichel? He's like 11%. Owned? Like, nobody's got him. Might as well take the shot that this young stud's going to end up absolute carrying. There have been worse bets in week one fantasy hockey.
I'm very sad that we're finishing the pod on the Chicago Blackhawks. Alan, any closing thoughts before we wrap tonight?
No, like you said, patience, man. It's only week two. we have what, 18, 19, 20 more weeks to go. Like, don't burn your team down yet.
And with that, just some closing remarks on the Tuesday game slate on the late games. Apparently Seth Jarvis doesn't like me. He scored their opening goal on the power play from his newly appointed line one center, Turbo Teravainen and Michael Bunting on the power play. And the Seattle Kraken scored first against the Colorado Avalanche. Kyler Yamamoto from Vince Dunn. So some interesting things happening in the late game sked tonight. That is it from the five-hole taxi squad for our week two weekend preview. Happy streaming. Good luck in your matchups this week. We will be back later this week with the week three preview. Keep an eye out on, we have multiple episodes being released this week, so keep an eye out for that. If you haven't already, listen to Quick Fares, our week one reflections with Maddie K, that was released this morning. If you haven't also already, listen to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Guide episode 3, the limited series from Mike Rogerson that he's been releasing. It came out on Monday. The taxi squad is going to park the van cab. We're all going to get out and get a little bit of breath of fresh air here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for to the listeners that submitted questions. And we will say goodnight. And it's all love. And we will, Jay, turn off the fares. And we will see you next time.
I lied. Burn it all down.
We'll pick you up later.
Do not trade Brady Shea for Rasmus Dahlin, straight up. What is happening in the world? What, like, really? Please, people, patience. Good night, everyone.